Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network. I'm your host, Matt Moore, senior NBA writer for the Action Network and Nuggets insider for 104.3 The Fan in Denver. So the Nuggets got absolutely railed on Wednesday night versus the Houston Rockets. No surprise. So in the NBA, I typically have said that there's a letdown effect, that when starters are out, certain guys will step up. Now, this fades over time. It gets harder and harder to get that kind of emotional boost. I talked to coaches about it this summer, and they backed up that same discussion point, saying, you know, look, before the game, if a guy's out, if a starter's out and a guy's gonna step up and start in his place, like the agent will be on the phone with that guy and saying, like, look, you're gonna get heavy minutes tonight. This is a good chance for you to boost your value. You can boost all your numbers. You need to have a good game. Like, really pushes on them. Teammates are there for him. It's an emotional lift. They want to win for the guy that's out, etc. It gets harder over time, though, because you got to do it consistently. And then you look at, like, look, we know Houston's a bad matchup for Denver unless they have an absolutely full-strength roster. They got that win earlier this season by catching Harden off guard with the double teams, but they had all of their personnel available for that. Particularly, look, that was a defensive ball game. Gary Harris and Paul Millsap played in that game and played well, and they were able to make enough plays. They found some things in the second matchup with containing the lob that even though Houston won, there's probably going to be something for later, but part of that was contingent on Mason Plumlee, who also missed last night's game. In the second segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the injury situation, what you should be concerned about, what you should not be concerned about. And in segment three, by the way, today, we're going to talk about some trade concepts that I think are at least worth discussing as we get closer to the trade deadline. Back to last night's game. Rockets won 121-105. I'm not going to do a five-star review on this game because, honestly, it's kind of a throwaway. The Nuggets were without Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, their entire starting backcourt, Paul Millsap, and Mason Plumlee, and then late, Michael Porter Jr. was a scratch with back soreness. Tightness, that's what it was. Back tightened up during warm-ups, and they were cautious, understandably so. I don't think it's any reason to panic about him. We'll talk about that in the second segment. But look, they're only going to win this game one of two ways. They had all their defensive personnel in order to slow down Houston and win a slugfest like in game one, or MPJ was able to come in and put up a huge number and catch the Rockets off guard. And that's how they would, you know, that's the alternative, is to win more of an offensive game with MPJ going nuts. Because they don't have any other weapons right now besides Jokic, because everybody's hurt. So, like, look, I do believe that you have to be expected to win some games injured. I was making this argument with Portland fans where I was saying, like, look, you know, you're at this point in the season and you're like six games under 500. And I get that you are really hurt and Zach Collins is out and the use of Nurkic and you lost Rodney Hood. And that's all really rough stuff. I don't disagree with that. That's three starters, much like the Nuggets are without three starters. However, I do think that, like, you have to be expected to win some of these games. Like, nobody's healthy. Like, Denver's kind of proof of that. Like, Denver's still going to go out and probably win, six of their next 10, even with all these injuries, because they're deep and well-coached and really good. The Blazers are not, because they're not really good. So I think, personally, this one was okay, because it was such a high-level opponent on the road without not just the three starters, but two key reserves. Like, Wancho played 14 minutes in this game. PJ Dozier played 21 minutes. That's just a lot of, like, Malik played 30. Like, they're just without dudes. And you have to have either offense or defense. You have to tilt heavily to win versus Houston. And Denver didn't have the ability to do either one. I don't think, however, there's nothing to learn from this game. Jokic was 8-19 from the field. And, like, look, they're going to key on him because of everybody else. Because there just wasn't, you know, like, they're not scared of any of the other weapons really on the floor. But Jeremy Grant was also 7-17. Capella continues to be a huge problem in this matchup. And they're going to have to figure out a way to counter that. The biggest change from game one to game three in this season series is Russell Westbrook, who finished last night 28 points on 11-25 shooting. So you're fine with the level of inefficiency. But 13-15 from the free-point or from the free throw line. He got to the line 15 times. He didn't take a three. So in the first one, the Nuggets dared him to shoot, and he couldn't capitalize. In this one, much like he has for the, like, lately, he just attacked. He finished with 28, 16, and 8 with 5 turnovers. He was a plus 25 in those minutes. Like, he just rammed the ball down their throat. However, at full strength, they're in much better position because of Gary Harris and the way the defensive matchups shift around. They can do more in a full strength matchup to slow down Westbrook specifically. Capella, to me, is honestly a little bit more of an issue. He was only a plus 9 in this game, finished with 14 points on 14 shots. But look, the lob continues to be a big threat, and Denver has to commit so much energy to fixing it. I will say, though, there's a trend. They disrupted it twice last night. There's a trend of Denver starting to get it together in terms of how to play that. They've just been rocked by it so many times. And early on, like years ago, they had no way to counter it because they didn't know what they were doing. They were so young. And then they didn't know how to counter it because they were still trying to figure out who they were. The last like 6 meetings, I think they've really started to figure out what to do about it. A lot of it's just timing. You have to be able to recognize that. Jokic was close to intercepting a few of those. And that's going to be a large part of it. If they get in a series versus Houston, they have to be underdogs because of how much of an advantage Houston has in this matchup. But if Jokic is able to disrupt the lob enough, that's going to swing things their way. This game was not a complete throwaway. It was mostly a throwaway. Like 105-121 honestly doesn't represent how big a difference. This game felt very much over after Houston got out to a lead. They won the first two quarters of 60-43. That was it. Like, game over. You're not going to come back from 17 down versus Houston on the road. Not if you're Denver, even with as bad as the Rockets have been lately. Houston has been struggling. This was a good win for them just to get back on the right track. But I think this is one that you can honestly let go of, say, all right, it's not just that we had injuries, it's the type of injuries that we had, and it's that we couldn't either put together a high-performing offense or a high-performing defense. We have to have one or the other to beat Houston. We'll feel confident that we'll be in a better situation if we face them in the playoffs. Now, here is why this game didn't matter, real quick. Season series is now 2-1 going into the final matchup in Sunday in Denver, okay? On Sunday in Denver. This means that Houston can't lose head-to-head. Denver can split, but they can't win outright this head-to-head matchup. If Houston wins on Sunday, they win that tiebreaker. Houston's up on Dallas. Dallas just lost Dwight Powell, so Houston's probably going to win the division. Last year, they finished a game ahead of Houston. If they ended up in a tie, they were going to lose that tiebreaker no matter what. They got real lucky OKC beat Houston on the last night of the season. If Houston does get it together and doesn't spiral off into oblivion, which they're still real close to doing, this game could wind up mattering a lot for playoff seedings. Like, this could be the difference between the second and the fifth seed in the West. That's how close things are likely to be by the end of the season. So these games do matter, and it's why, you know, look, if they can get Gary Harris back for Sunday, if they can get Michael Porter Jr. back for Sunday, boy, it would help, because they're going to be without Jamal, they're going to be without Paul Millsap, and they're going to be without Plumlee. And finding a way to win those games is real tough. This is a bad break of the season to miss those three guys. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk more about those injuries, about what the long-term and short-term cost of those are, and about why I'm not necessarily concerned. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know when you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants fast. Also add skills tests to your job posts so you can be confident in your applicant's abilities. Their library of more than 50 skills tests ranges from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. We'll be right back. back here on Locked On Nuggets, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. So the Nuggets are injured. I don't know if you've noticed that. So they're now missing, at this point, Jamal Murray has a bad ankle. Mason Plumlee has an injured foot. Paul Millsap is just hurt all over. I think he's just really sore in several of his body parts, which is not great. You've got Gary Harris, who I think is close to returning. He almost played in Wednesday's game, but couldn't quite get there with the right adductor strain. They want to make sure that he comes back 100%. And then Michael Porter Jr. has the back tightness. So let's deal with the one that you're probably most concerned about, which is MPJ. It's not related to what caused him to have back surgery and miss 2 years. It's not an impact thing. He just was sore and they're being patient. Now look, I will be totally honest with you. I don't necessarily trust the Nuggets when it comes to injury reporting. As a preface, I respect and appreciate everyone that works with Denver. I've worked with their PR staff for 7 years and have a good relationship with everyone there. I have a good relationship with the organization. I don't expect them to be honest because no team is really honest about this stuff. Like, they're just not. Like, teams distribute information in a way that is advantageous to them. So if MPJ was having a major issue, they wouldn't be transparent about it because there's no real benefit to them being so. But furthermore, it's not in their nature. We didn't really know the severity of Gallo's re-injury on the knee or how the surgery went wrong for months. There was a period of time in 2017, I believe, Gary Harris had a foot injury. And I asked Malone what it was, and he said it's a foot injury. And I said, yeah, but like what? And he said, it's a foot injury. I'm not a doctor. And I said, okay, can I talk to the doctor? And they said, no. And I said, okay, well, PR person, can I get some information? Can you talk to the doctor and find out what it is? And they said, sure. So they went and talked to the doctor. And then I asked, okay, what did they say? And they said, well, it's a foot injury. And I said, I know. What kind of foot injury? And they said, just a foot injury. And then I went to Gary Harris. And I said, Gary. I was like, look, what is it? Like, what are you dealing with? Foot injury. I said, what's wrong with it? Like, is it still there? And he was like, I don't know, man. They just said to say foot injury. This is what I deal with sometimes with the Nuggets. They are just not great about some of this stuff. And look, sometimes it's a guy's not feeling right and you don't know what it is and he's just sore and it could be tendonitis. It could be a lot of things with the knee. It could be like a whole bunch of different stuff. And they just kind of want to wait and rest and see, and nothing shows up on the MRI. Like, the human body is a mystery sometimes, and especially so sometimes with the Nuggets. My point in saying all this is, like, even though all the indications from the Nuggets regarding MPJ are, it's fine, don't worry about it, he is questionable for the next game versus the Pelicans. Like, doesn't mean he won't play, but it does mean, like, I'm a little concerned that it's not probable or anything. Like, they just moved him to questionable. Now Gary Harris is also questionable, and Gary Harris is probably going to play. So with questionable, it's been basically the way the formula goes is guys go from out to questionable to playing. Questionable puts you in game time decision because they don't like game time decision because the league is trying to get them away from that. They want the injuries known 30 minutes in advance, the availability for gambling. Like, that's point blank what it is. I wrote a whole thing for the Action Network this summer about it. It's a big deal to gamblers and the books and the league, and like that's what they want. So you're very rarely going to see a guy go from injured to questionable to probable to out. Like, he won't ever go backwards. He'll only go, oh, he's going to play. That can happen late. But my point here is that I'm going to be a little bit cautious with MPJ because even though there's all these indications, it's not a problem. He missed 2 years of basketball, man. Like, he's had all these problems. And until he does like get back, I'm always like, I think pretty much constantly, it's going to have to be a couple of years of MPJ being healthy and playing consistently. Like, 3 years before whenever he has a back issue, I'm not going to be like, I just think I'm going to be a little bit worried based off of his injury history and the fact that I don't feel like if Denver says like, no, it's fine, he should be back in a little bit, I don't feel like I can believe them. I don't blame them for that, but that's what I think the reality is. Gary should be back soon. I'm hopeful that this will not be like last year where he was just like a shell when he came back. He was so frustrated last year and just not himself. I'm hopeful that they caught it early and that's why he sat out, and they sat out a little bit extra because they're trying to be super cautious. Malone's clearly worried about it. He mentioned that in his comments the other day. Like, he's pretty clearly concerned about Gary having a year like last year because they need Gary to be obviously playing really well in order for them to be in a position that they want to be in. Plumlee's right cuboid injury does hurt quite a bit. So, look, I think MPJ needs to start. I think MPJ deserves to start. I think it's best for the team if MPJ starts. I don't know if Malone's there yet. And if he's not there yet, then that means that Porter's still going to be playing a lot with the bench unit. And even if he starts, he's probably still going to be playing a lot with the bench unit. He's not going to be handcuffed to Jokic. Plumlee and Porter had developed a real chemistry. Like, you saw it consistently throughout that stretch where he was starting to pop off for 15-plus points a game. Plumlee is willing to pass to him in a real meaningful way. This is the key, is like, look, you have to be willing to go find the rookie that doesn't know what he's doing and be like, I'm going to trust you to make this play. Monte's getting there. I think Monte a lot of the time is just like, oh, I'm going to make this play to Mason or to Malik because they're open and it works and I know how to make this play. He's still kind of learning how to do stuff with MPJ. But Plumlee's played really pretty well after, I thought he started the season terribly. I thought this first like month and a half was awful. I think since then he's played really well. I think since about December 10th or so, he's played really well. His defense has been much better. He's trying to do a lot less in terms of his post-ups. He's back to being a creator. He's back to being trying to make hustle plays. I think Mason's defense has really helped turn that bench unit around a little bit. It's gotten a lot better over the last couple months. So this is a genuine hurt for them. Now, I think it opens up the possibility of Grant at the five, which I like a lot. But I also would not be surprised if they find themselves signing a guy or looking at Bol Bol. Like, at some point, they're going to have to address some of these things and try and get through it. I would imagine the front office is stressing a little bit about the idea of Jokic having to play basically 36 to 38 minutes a night or more just to get through the stretch. Malone will ride him because Malone's trying to rack up a top four seed and make sure they got home court. But you have to have some sort of long-term view with Jokic. You got to be a little bit managing of his minutes, especially after the rough summer and everything else. I think you got to make sure that you're patient. So I wouldn't be surprised if they added somebody. I also have said that this probably opens up Malik trade talks a little bit, which I think it does. I think if you're talking to a team and the team is like, well, we have this young prospect and we'll give you our 2021 heavily protected first rounder, which would be probably okay value. Denver's probably like, well, we don't really need the 2020 first rounder. How about you give us a second and throw in that bench big that you're not using? Okay, cool. And that may free up a little bit. Like, having to need him for a little while, to need a backup center, might actually help get through this a little bit, just because having a third center on roster is probably not the worst idea, given how small Grant is. I like Grant at the five. And he played in the Minnesota game, he played Grant and Porter together as a 4-5 combo, and it worked really well, because Porter's just like a lot more big and athletic than I thought he was going to be. He spent time in the weight room. And so that's doable, but I think they'd be better off with maybe a third big. Look, Millsap's got a sprained knee, and it's just his body. So, like, it's going to be a while on him. Jamal's going to fight like hell to get back, but he needs to get 100%. And I think the training staff knows that he needs to be 100%. They're going to try and fight him. So that's where the injuries are at. When we come back, we're going to talk about trade options that don't necessarily, beyond what I just talked about with Malik Beasley, and what that means for the Nuggets going into the trade deadline. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. right, final segment here on Locked On Nuggets, part of Locked On Network, your team every day. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at HB Basketball. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nuggets. And check out DMVR for all of Adam's awesome content creation, along with him and Harrison Wind and Brendan Voigt and the whole crew. So, the NBA trade deadline is 2 weeks away, essentially. Is it 2 weeks? Maybe it's three. Nope, it's 2 weeks. And so, Denver's going to have a couple of things that they're going to have to look at. One, we talked about the Malik Beasley trade. I haven't gotten a firm idea yet of what it is that they're asking for. They're just taking offers. They're not in any sort of hurry about it, is what I understand. I think Malik's played well, and I still think he brings a lot to this team. I think the only real way that they should maybe target it, the only reason I would maybe make a move instead of maybe letting him walk in restricted free agency is if they really do get an offer for somebody that can be a major upgrade, then I think you should probably look at it. I am about to dabble in something that I am loath to do, which is a big move conversation. I am very reluctant with the Nuggets to talk about any sort of big move. Tim Connelly saw Ty Lawson go through three DWIs before he finally moved him. Okay, Kenneth Faried sat on the bench for a season before he finally moved him. Danilo Gallinari left in free agency. Never made that move. They are very patient, and they are... The Nuggets have not felt like making a move from a position of urgency is in their best interest. Even if it means losing a guy for nothing, they are more willing to do that than risk compromising the overall plan. We don't skip steps, right? The question before them, I think, is what is the next step? And the next step might be a big move. I want to clarify before I get into this, I haven't spoken with anyone in the Nuggets front office about this, because if I do, then I would have to talk about it with you. Or I'd have to be keeping something from you. I also just haven't had the opportunity. Like, I haven't sought them out to seek their counsel on this issue. My assumption at this point is that they will not do anything drastic, that the same team will be in place after the deadline. I have resisted the idea of them making a move because of how good they were last year. Like, why would you make a move? You won 52 games last year, 54 games, and you wound up as a 2 seed, and you were 1 game from the Western Conference Finals. And then, like, this year, they're on pace for as many or more wins, right? They're in a West that's a lot more competitive because the Warriors don't exist. The Blazers are a non-factor after beating them last year. There's all of these things that are in place, I think, for them to keep the team and trust in it. There's also, like, look, Will Barton was traded here and embraced the idea of being a Denver Nugget. He really saw this. I think, there's selfishness there. It's that they don't have a guy. I can be a guy here. I can be like a pillar. And Will has played phenomenal this season. He's been the Nuggets' second best player behind Jokic. But he also very much wanted to be here and wanted to be a part of this, and he has close relationship with Tim Connelly based off of their Baltimore connection. Trading Will would be painful. Deeply painful for everyone. Like, Will would feel betrayed and hurt. He'd get it because he's seen this happen in the league and nothing catches him off guard. But it would hurt everybody. It would hurt the locker room, the front office, the coaching staff, the fans that do love him and appreciate him, the media who love him because he's a great quote and he's always been honest and upfront with us, all of that. Okay? That makes that move really difficult. Gary Harris is a guy that was involved in trade rumors at the draft and 2 days later went to Atlanta to pitch Paul Millsap. Like, turned around and went out and helped get the biggest free agent acquisition the team has had in a long, long time, if ever. Okay? That's also tough. Gary's been here since the beginning. He has been a rock with Jokic. Like, those two guys have played with each other their whole careers. Like, literally their whole careers have been entwined. Trading Gary would be painful. Jamal is definitely one of the guys, is definitely, like, you know, they have a lot of respect and admiration for him. They believe a lot in him, as they witnessed by the contract, and the contract's hard to move. Juancho Hernan Gomez is real good friends with Nikola Jokic. You risk upsetting the star player, which is not ever something you really want to do, right? They're close. There are all these things that kind of, like, get in the way. Paul Millsap is, you would be trading a guy that chose Denver because he grew up here and he loved this place and he wanted to be like a pillar here. Like, he wanted to make his home here. Trading Millsap has costs. Like, there are costs to all these moves. And I know as fans, you're like, I don't care, I just want the best basketball team. But you shouldn't think of it like that, because all of these things, when it's just like, they're so good, but they don't fit right. There's a story in The Athletic today about the Clippers, and they made all the right moves, and they have a great bench unit, and young guys like Shamit, and they've got veterans like Lou Williams, and they've got superstars in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and yet that team does not have great chemistry. And when they were in Denver, like, I actually caught it. I was in the locker room. I was like, this is a weird locker room. Like, I've seen a lot of losing locker rooms, and I know the difference between a losing one and a weird one. And it was a weird one. So reading that in The Athletic today didn't surprise me. That's what you risk with Denver, is that, like, you do not want to fundamentally change what Denver's entire makeup is. And that's dangerous. That said, David Aldridge reported Bradley Beal is unhappy about something. They got to figure out what it is was what he wrote about. It does appear that Beal is frustrated by the direction of the franchise. I don't know why. He signed the extension and he had to know how bad this was. If Beal's back on the block, which we all assumed he was off, he can't be dealt during the season. If he's available this summer, I am now of the mind you have to pursue it. And the reason I am of that mind is because of Michael Porter Jr. I talked about this on the episode after he had that huge game the other night. He fundamentally alters your projections, okay? It's no longer Jokic doesn't have to be your best player anymore. If Nikola Jokic gets to be your second best player and Michael Porter Jr. is your 1A, that changes things. That changes things dramatically. That opens your window up a lot wider. Like, you can be a serious force. Because if you could put MPJ and Jokic in a lineup and then just be like, we're going to put three top-line defenders around them. Top-line defenders who can play, make, and shoot. You now have the core of a championship team. That's a championship team. Okay? I've talked before about being concerned about trades because of the small backcourt. I think that that's also in play here. Not only because, like, look, there's a difference between our backcourt's too small, we have to make a trade to address our small backcourt. And the difference between that and we have the capacity now to have an incredibly tall, long, athletic lineup with Jokic, MPJ, and three tall wings. If you can make that move, you're in a fundamentally different spot. Now, look, Jamal's going to be undersized, and so you have to make a call about him. I will say this. I don't think they should trade both of them within the next, like, 4 years. I think you have to go in on either Gary as, like, a core player with his defense and his slashing ability and just being a solid role player who will probably have a really good season again at some point. Or you need to go in on Jamal as the guy that you paid him to be and the guy that was putting up, like, 30 points in the playoffs, right? You have to commit to one or the other. Don't overreact to how the season has gone. Jamal's been in a weird spot. He played great to start the season in terms of playmaking and defense. He's tailed off there, and his shot isn't there. As Jokic has gotten better, he's gotten worse. He's battling a lot of injuries. Don't overreact to this stuff. We just tend to overreact. But I do think that it's probably time Denver starts looking at a big-name move to fundamentally take a shot. I think you have to start looking downfield, to use a football analogy. I think Denver has consistently, on the drive of this core, has run the ball, and they picked up some big yardage situations. They made a huge play last year, which was basically like a screen pass that went for big yardage. Now I think you got to start looking for big targets to the end zone. You're at like the 30. You got to start looking for targets to the end zone. this team is that good, and MPJ might legitimately be the wide receiver that can make that play, or quarterback, whatever you want to use in this analogy. Anyway, that'll wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Adam will be back with you tomorrow. You get Adam on Friday, which I know you guys will enjoy. Nuggets play Pelicans, and they play the Rockets. We'll probably have a joint World's Finest episode on Sunday after the Rockets game, which we may not go great, but we'll still try and make that one work. For Matt Moore, which is me, find me on Twitter at HBBasketball. Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for listening.